And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
It's Monday, August the 1st. Happy birthday, horses in Australia, and welcome everybody to a new week of No Dunks. Well, somewhat of a new week anyway. We're starting off with a little something different here. It's me solo in the studio. I'm flying solo within here, but of course I'm not really by myself because the man making the magic happen. Nothing would happen without JD. JD.
Hello.
How you doing?
Welcome back, Lee.
Thank you. Thank
been
you.
Been a while.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks. Took some time off with the family, did some traveling, and yeah, good to be back in the studio and back to the grind.
You look maxed and relaxed.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was the most relaxing trip. I would say we tried to max it out as much as we could. But Europe's a little bit... I'm not looking for any pity from anyone. I had a great time, no doubt about that. But certainly there was a feeling that people were ready to get out and travel. And yeah, we had some fun times. What about yourself? How was things since I last saw you in Vegas?
You know, holding it down. We're launching new shows left and right.
Yes.
We got no bunts. We got no breaks. It's been a very busy off-season.
Yeah.
Usually it's a little, take some time, but no, we're cranking things out over here.
Yeah, and you're the only common denominator with all these shows here.
I am. I got to hire somebody.
Yeah, well, so I'll tell you what we've got coming up ahead here for those who are in the Stream Team Live. Tomorrow, Tuesday, 10 a.m., Graydon Gordian with Brian and Matt from the Red Flags podcast. Mm-hmm. Going to break down the Hungarian GP that happened yesterday. Fantastic race. I won't spoil it, but man, great stuff there. And then Wednesday, Tass is back in the studio with his banger, No Bunts, with The Athletic's Jason Starks.
Yes.
So that's been, Tass has been having a lot of fun with that. I've been seeing a lot of the clips going around. It's great stuff. Are you a baseball head now yourself? Or what?
I'm all in on baseball now. Savannah Bananas, go. Savannah Bananas.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't heard from them when we said I'd be happy to go and play a game for them in the summer.
Oh, but wait. They offered you to play a game?
I offered to them that I would like to come and play, yeah. But nothing happened yet. And then, how's this for a scoop? I'm back on the first day back in the office and I got a scoop.
Go on.
On Thursday, we've got a brand new podcast, brand new podcast with a throwback, Matty O.
Yep. We work sort of keeping it under our hats, but why? Why bother? Like, let's hype this up.
Yeah.
This is a Matt Austin vehicle that we are launching here on Thursday, and I can't wait.
Yeah.
And it's not basketball related.
Well, it couldn't be, though, really. Is it the complainant? Oh, I mean, you've spoken to him. Tell us a little bit more about what we can expect.
The show is called Is This Good? Question mark. And I'll just leave it at that. I think it pretty much speaks for itself.
Yes, that with Matt could go in any direction. Anyway, that'll be you, me, Matt, and Tass.
That's right.
So
the first one.
The very first episode. So I'm looking forward to that 1 p.m. because Matt, of course, is out on the West Coast in Los Angeles.
Correct.
So that will be local time for him, 10 a.m. So he couldn't get up before 10 a.m. to do that. instead, we have to do it. But anyway, so that's the week ahead. Now, JD, listen, I have to say this to you.
Yeah.
If Kevin Durant and Donovan Mitchell get traded here this morning, it's you and me. It's you and
all
me.
Right,
okay.
I'm ready.
So, and one other thing I wanted to ask you, JD, because I know you're a bit of a soapy TV fan.
Oh, yes, I am.
And you also spent some time in Melbourne, in Australia.
I have,
In the early 90s there.
Yeah.
Did you see the big, big news over the weekend?
I didn't. Neighbours? Is this Neighbours related?
Done. Neighbours.
What?
Final episode of Neighbours, yeah.
OMG.
Yeah.
Wow, Kylie Minogue came from Neighbours, right?
Yeah, Margot Robbie came from Neighbours.
That's right.
Liam Hemsworth. There's a few, I don't know, Holly Valance, I don't know if you know her, Natalie Imbruglia, Guy Pearce.
Yeah, yeah.
Russell Crowe made a cameo on there. 37 years it lasted.
Wow.
And Kylie Minogue came back for the final episode.
Okay.
She said three words.
What were they?
They were like,
I'm back, baby.
No, I think she said, we're home, and then she said Harold, because she saw Harold. She said three words.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she must have shot it kind of without the rest of the crew around as well. I think she was. Look, it's a bit blasphemous to say, maybe, because Kylie's such an icon in Australia, but. Yeah. Sounds like she was a bit diva-esque, like three words.
You think?
Yeah, I'm like, come on, Kyles, come on.
We got Kylie for three words.
Yeah, and I was wondering, I mean, I don't know if internationally anymore she would be the biggest. I mean, Margot Robbie would probably be bigger than her, wouldn't she?
Margot Robbie, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, Russell Crowe.
Right, yeah, but Russell Crowe was more a cameo rather than a regular character, whereas Margot Robbie was on it for a while.
Oh, so, and right now, it's Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
So get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, Kylie probably still in Britain and maybe within Australia, but internationally.
For sure.
Anyway, 37 years later, and there we go. So
that's making me nervous for Coors now.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, if Neighbors can fall, you know that Coors is it could be next.
And the reason they fell was because they couldn't get a TV deal in England to keep Neighbors going. Yeah, that's where all the money was coming from. So, no one, anyway, it was great. It was, it wasn't great. I watched it.
It wasn't great.
I watched the final episode. But the thing is, I haven't really watched it for 30 years. So a lot of the characters, I was like, I had no idea who these people were. So anyway. Neighbors.
R.I.P.
Okay, well, let's get to the reason why we're here today, because I'm popping open a pack. Haven't done it for a while, and I'm bringing in one of the OG bloggers. He's the second most famous man from Indiana behind John Mellencamp. He's from Lafayette, Indiana. He is Kelly Dwyer, KD on Hoops. Welcome to Poppin' Packs.
Kelly Cougar Dwyer, ready to pop. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, thanks for being here. How are things going, Kelly? I'm a subscriber to your fantastic newsletter there, The Second Arrangement. I love the breakdowns you do. I love the information you provide. I love the throwbacks. You had the one there last week with Danny Ainge ripping on Antoine Walker in the 2003 three-point shootout in one of the most bizarre three-point shootouts we've ever seen, just the flat-footed heaves from Antoine Walker. So how's it all going there at the Second Arrangement?
It's going great. We got something coming up on Magic Johnson wanting to play with Shaq and Kobe. We got something on Latrell Sprewell going to the Washington Bullets, not the Wizards. If you missed out on any NBA headlines from 1996, I got you covered in the next couple of installments of the Second Arrangement at Substack. Go scope it out. It's a good time.
That's awesome. $5 a month. Very, very much worth the investment. And Kelly does some great stuff. And talking about 1996, that's going to be perfect for where we're going for today. But before we actually get into the cards, we obviously had some sad news yesterday. One of the greatest basketball players, one of the greatest humans, one of the greatest people to have ever graced the planet, Bill Russell, sadly passed away at 88 years of age. Look, I mean, there's very few people who have ever achieved what Bill did, not only on the basketball court, but his impact off the court as well. I mean, he's got all the accolades there. 11-time NBA champ, 2 as a coach, 5-time MVP, 2 NCAA championships, Olympic gold medalist. And he also broke some barriers there, becoming the first black coach of any North American pro sports team. He received the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2011. But I think even just more than that, I think every time anyone talks about basketball and some of the greatest players of all time, Bill Russell certainly in that top 3, 4, 5 group, a fantastic athlete and a fantastic competitor. Kelly, any words, any thoughts you would like to add there?
Just he changed the game. There were certain shots you couldn't take anymore. Like this got me to the All-Star game and got my team to the final shots. You could not release a hook shot from below 6'11" after Bill Russell. You could not, mess around on a flat-footed jumper. You had to pay attention to what was happening over your shoulder in the fast break. All the stuff that we take for granted in today's game that seems so normal, Bill Russell brought to basketball. And I'm happy in a way, because I remember when Will passed away and no one was ready for it. It was obviously this is a drag, but that was a surprise. Mm. And it was dark and it was unfortunate. We really just hadn't gotten a chance to say thank you to him. And Russell got that for the last quarter century. So I'm happy about that. And as you put expertly, it was just the list of accomplishments is obscene, and take that all away, and he's still, a Hall of Famer for just the way he changed the game on the court. Without getting to all the ways him and his stiff upper lip and all the stuff he learned from his father. I'm reading a book about him right now, just the way he stood up for himself from day one and set precedents for himself and others and did not, you know, standing up for his name on the road and when they were denied service in Southern hotel rooms, mm-hmm. You know, sticking up for other players, sticking up for, you know, basically developing the idea of a superstar NBA player. I mean, he didn't practice. He sat and sipped tea and read the newspaper during practice because he gave it all on the court. And his coach wanted him there in June. And he was the first modern NBA player ahead of Mikan and ahead of, you know, anyone else from the early 50s who had a little bit of spirit, a Jumpin' Joe Folks or something like that. They immediately became an anachronism because of Bill Russell. So I'm happy. I'm very happy in a way that he got to go around and shake hands and be on TV and have, you know, give awards away and have everyone know who the heck he was. So what a life.
Yeah. And I think that's a thing. I mean, there's a lot of times we talk about former players and they sort of rip on the younger generation or whatever. I think Bill, that was one thing about him is he always appreciated and applauded the way that the game has changed and how great the game is still becoming. There was never any, you never felt there was any tension there between, you know, him getting lost in years gone by or anything like that. He very much loved the way the game was going. And also, I think his personality, we saw, I'm sure you saw it yesterday on Twitter, there were tons of clips going around of him, you know, being a funny guy, having this incredible sense of humor, you know, giving the bird to Charles Barkley and to Vince Carter and, you know, calling out those other Hall of Fame centers at the NBA Awards that time with, you know, I think it was Alonzo and Dikembe, you know, saying, I'd beat all you guys, you know. So he had this fantastic charisma about him that he was able to maintain throughout his entire life, and he will be sadly missed. So we certainly pass on our condolences to his wife Janine, his entire family, and all Bill's friends and everyone who he touched. I'm sure his funeral and his remembrance ceremony is going to be one of the, you know, it's going to be a huge turnout. Everyone from the basketball world was no doubt impacted and affected by Bill Russell. So rest in peace, Bill, and we wish him and his family all the best going forward. Okay, well, now, Kelly, what we're really here for is to pop open some packs. And as I mentioned, your Substack always dives deep into sort of mid-90s basketball. I know that's when you covered the game really, really closely, or sort of, you know, when you began following it and getting up close and personal. And today's a great day, August the 1st. I don't know if you know why, but do you know August the 1st, the year 2000, what happened?
2000. Mm. Was Derek Anderson traded to Portland?
Oh, not quite, but there was a major trade that happened in August 1, 2000. This is thanks to NBA Cobwebs. I saw this on the timeline just before we started here. The Miami Heat trade PJ Brown, Jamal Mashburn, Otis Thorpe. Fantastic stuff there. Tim James, Rodney Buford to the Charlotte Hornets for, can you think of any of the players who came back in that deal?
They got Eddie Jones. That's was right. In that deal. They got Mason turned into an all-star with Miami that year. Boy, I think that just about fills up the contract. No, I'm just going to get out there while I can.
There's a couple of other classic. There's the names. one guy who one of the first three-point shooters in the NBA. He's from Marietta. He's got a great surname. I love his surname the most. Former Seattle Supersonic, former Dallas Maverick. Went to the Denver Nuggets. Just a gunner with a great surname. Number three for the Seattle Super. Great.
Edric Bohannon?
No, Dale Ellis.
And, Dale Ellis.
Yeah. Oh, and of course, the man who had the most juiced triple-double in NBA history, Ricky Davis, also
goodness
invoked
gracious.
In that deal.
That's so, right. They're going to run with him. Gosh. So, Ricky Davis was so fun in Charlotte. Go find that on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. He was always great fun to watch. I mean, you know, love him or hate him, you couldn't stop watching him no matter what he was going to do out there. So, great. So what I've got here anyway, Kelly, I've got all these packs of cards and I'm going to show them to you and then you can choose where you want to go. You can start here with an Upper Deck 91-92 pack we've got. We've got one of my favorite packs, this NBA Jam session from 93-94.
That one is huge. Look at that Mylar. Oh, my gosh.
It's an incredible one. Then we've got a Skybox inaugural version. I think this is from 1990 there. That's a classic. Then we've got another Skybox Premium from 94-95 with a special Grant Hill insert set in there. We've got 12 packs there. We've got Antoine Walker here on the NBA Tops tip-off from 99. 2000. That's great. And then we've got a few others here. I've got more Skybox. I've got another Skybox 91-92 there. Upper Deck. What have we got? Yeah, we've got Upper Deck.
Lightning Bolt.
And then we've also got this crazy 6 sticker pack of Upper Decks from Michael Jordan on the front there. I'm guessing that's from about 96, 97. Can't actually see it there, but we got that. And then we got a couple of more modern versions here. These are from last season, NBA Hoops, 21-22 season. So where do you want to go? Where do you want to start here?
I'd love to do that giant skybox.
Okay.
And any of those other skyboxes just look impossible to get. I mean, those things could last another millennium with those that pack job they had.
Yeah. Is this the one you mean? The NBA?
Sure,
games?
Yeah.
Yeah. 93. Great. I have done this a couple of times with some other guests, and it's always a banger. So I'm running out of them, but it's worth it. So let's have some fun. Now, if you're unfamiliar, the rules are... If I get a checklist card, I have to weed it, and JD is going to police that. He did that last time when I had Ariel Helwani. I tried to get with it, and JD was insistent on me trying to weed it, so that's it. And then the other rule is if we get Otis Thorpe, technically we haven't got him even though we've already mentioned him, then we just all win. It's just a great day in the NBA world. So
OT Otis Thorpe.
Okay. Wow. Okay. What a start. Very good start, but we've got a guy with a jersey with no name, no team number, no team name, and no number on it. But you certainly know this guy because he was a very high draft pick in 1993, and he also had a very, very famous controversial contract situation after his first season. And
who didn't back then?
Yeah.
So we're looking at C-Web?
We are looking at, look at this for C-Web though. Here, I'll pop it up there. See if you can see it. Look at that. No, no jersey or no number, no name, no team. Just
Michigan can't give that up. You can't let that happen.
Yeah.
They probably switched out the shoes. Those used to be Air Huaraches, but they put in some typical stock Nikes or something.
Chris.
That's Kyle Weber.
That was pretty crazy because he had, of course, in his rookie season, that famous behind-the-back dunk on Charles Barkley. But what do you remember about, you know, that time? Because he had a 7-year contract, I believe.
That was the before the rookie-scale contract.
Yeah.
And you could just sign a 32-year contract with an opt-out after 3 months.
Yeah.
And it was like an NFL team. It was fantastic. Eric Montrose had an 11-year contract. Danielle Marshall had a 9-year contract. And yeah, what if he said Weber had like a 7-year contract, but you know, with the ability to leave his team after a year or 2 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And boy, howdy, did he get out of there.
Oh, yes, he did. Yes, he did. And he moved to the Washington Bullets, of course, had some time there before moving on to the Sacramento Kings. I mean, where do you remember, like if someone says Chris Weber, what's the first team you think of there?
Bullets yeah, red.
Really?
Because the Kings were great and it was fun and was the best team in basketball. But with the Bullets, everyone's second favorite team was the Warriors back then.
Right.
We were always waiting for the Warriors to hit. And when he finally hit in Washington, it was great. You felt like you know, especially for younger fans, it was fun to have someone kind of stick it to Nelly and stick it to Sports Illustrated and stick it to all the, you know, the people who have been given the same stick to Gen X players. And
right.
For Webb and Juwan Howard and Strickland to take that team to the playoffs in 97 was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That was that the last year, though, with the Bullets in 97?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Yeah. Okay, great. Moving on here. We've got a guy who began his career with the LA Lakers, but I sort of think of him more of his as a Minnesota Timberwolf.
Campbell?
Who?
Tony Campbell?
No, not Tony Campbell. This guy was a left-handed, not really a point guard, more a shooting guard.
Anthony Peeler.
Anthony Peeler. I was going to say, you might see him in the kitchen from time to time. Here he is, Anthony Peeler.
Do they make left-handed potato peelers? I don't know. That might be kind of tough.
Great question. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What sort of stands out to you from Anthony Peeler? Because I think he was a sort of on that first team after the Magic retired year, I believe, about 92-93.
Yeah, and then they traded him to Vancouver for second round picks. Thank you, Stu Jackson, to get Shaquille O'Neal. My favorite memory of Anthony Peeler is during the lockout year. I was a freshman at the University of Missouri, and they had an Anthony Peeler Day at the football game. And I did not make the event because I had my wisdom teeth taken out, and I was sleeping in my dorm cot. And all my friends got home from the football game and told me, hey, they had an Anthony Peeler Day, Mr. NBA. Hey, Kelly, they had an Anthony Peeler Day. but he didn't show up to Anthony Peeler Day, and it's the lockout right now. What? Why? What did he have to do, Anthony Peeler? So that's my Anthony Peeler story, is a no-show with no excuse.
Wow, that's why we do this segment, though. I mean, who would have thought we would have been talking about an Anthony Peeler Day that he didn't even show up to? That's just incredible stuff. Well, this guy, if he ever showed up anywhere, you couldn't miss him because he was a giant, a European giant, had a game winner against the New York Knicks in about 1990, it's 94 or 95 in the playoffs. One of the very few players from this country in Europe.
I'd say Rick Smith, probably.
You would be correct by saying Rick Smith's there. Yes, there he is, the big 7'4 Dutchman.
Beautiful. Yeah. That's the most he's ever bent his knees in 15 NBA years.
He's got the pumps on there by the looks of it.
He's got pumps, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. That's great. Yeah, the what the one I'm thinking of where he has that game winner against the Knicks, is that 94 or 95? I think it's there in Market Square Arena, if I'm
Yeah, remember. It's one of those just post-MJ middle seasons. It was like, oh, gosh, I guess a team with Rick Smith leading the way can win an NBA title right now. Yeah. This is some interesting stuff. Yeah, he was great. He retired. He could have played a couple extra years, popped on the counting stats. He was a heck of a player, but they were going to make that switch to the Isaiah Thomas situation in Indiana. He's like, I think I'm going to retire while I can still walk. Yeah. And didn't he go on to be a motorbike guy?
I think maybe.
I think if anyone Googles Rick Smith and motorbikes, he had like a motorbike team or something.
Well, let's ask the stream team, because there's people live now watching this on YouTube. If anyone knows if Rick Smith got into, motorsports or
I believe it's a bike situation.
Wow, that
hills and Excitebike and that whole thing.
Someone in the stream team is saying it's Smith's buzzer beater was against the Magic and not the Knicks.
That's right.
Yeah.
Tree Rollins.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for that. Came through from Googs 771. Maybe that's Tom Gugliotta in the stream team. Not sure. Okay, next we've got definitely one of the most fiery players from the 1990s. He won a championship in 94, but it was very, very bitter to not be a part of the 1995 team. In fact, he entered the stands at one point. I can't remember exactly the circumstances, but he also had a 50-point game. I think everyone remembers this guy, and he's great follow on Twitter.
One of the best follows on Twitter, absolutely.
He's always ripping on the Utah Jazz, so I know you know who this one is.
Vernon Maxwell.
Mad Max, Vernon Maxwell, there he is, yeah. I've tried to get him to be on Pop and Pax, but...
That would be just...
Yeah.
That would be perfect. That'd be a four-hour episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, hope you get Adam Keefe and Shannon Anderson and any other Utah Jazz you can put in there.
That's great. Adam Keefe is the great trivia question. I believe he was the fifth starter for the 1998 Jazz in the finals. Is that right?
I think. For most of the aforementioned Shannon Anderson, ticked off Jerry Sloan in the middle of the season. So he's like, I'm just going to play a 6'10" power forward in your place and win 64 games.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about Vernon Maxwell, I think he has finally gotten over his, his trade away from the Rockets in 94, and he's moved past it now, because he was, he held on to that for a while. He was very, very upset. That they did trade him away, but I think as the time has passed, he's accepted that's the way it goes.
Fam has been good to Vernon. We appreciated his skills. He could be a right now player. We kind of understand him when people go in the stands. If you've been to a few NBA games, you've seen those guys.
I think he said, I mean, this is not something shocking to hear, but, the 94 Bulls, I believe they, the Rockets beat the Bulls, in 94 without Jordan, but they in 93 I believe the Rockets beat the Bulls during the regular season, and he said if they could have gotten to the finals they would have beaten the Bulls, but of course you've got to get to the finals first. They weren't able to do that, so anyway,
that West,
yeah,
brutal West.
Okay, this next player, you'll definitely remember him because he's a very laid-back character, and began his career with the Dallas Mavericks. He moved, in fact, he was also a part of the Indiana Pacers 2000 team. I think this guy was a three-time NBA runner-up, I believe. One time with the Los Angeles Lakers in 91. One time with the Seattle Supersonics in 1996,
Oh, I gotcha.
And then one time with the Indiana Pacers in the year 2000, big lefty, hit the game-winning shot in game one of the 1991 NBA Finals against the Chicago Bulls.
One of Jerry West's favorite players of all time.
Absolutely.
And again, could just be maybe an all-star right now. Sam Perkins.
Sam Perkins. There he is. Yeah. Yeah.
Look at that uniform.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Also a member of that iconic 1984 draft. And was he a North Carolina, wasn't he?
Is
he?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, made the cover of Sports Illustrated with James Worthy and I believe Matt Doherty and some other and Dean Smith wouldn't let Michael Jordan make the cover because freshmen don't make the cover of Sports Illustrated, according to Dean Smith.
Right.
So Jordan was denied his first ever cover.
Yeah, yeah, Big Sam. You know, I think the story goes that he did play in a do-rag during a preseason game too. There towards the end of his career,
he earned it.
Yeah, he always looked like he was you know, never in a rush, which is it was just the way he was. You know, he always looked pretty casual and pretty cool.
Look up his 3-point shootout. It took twice as long as Antoine Walker's. I can't remember the year, but I think it's still going, actually.
Yeah.
He's making his way to the middle rack.
Yeah. I wonder, though, if he hit the money balls because, you know, that was that one against the Bulls. I remember Magic made the pass, and I think it's Horace Grant closing out. It's a huge shot. But I was always disappointed because I remember the early Mavericks Lakers rivalry of that sort of, you know, mid to late 80s before he went to the Lakers. And he was a huge part of those Mavericks teams with Rolando Blackman, Mark Aguirre, Roy Tarpley. I sort of wish, you know, the Mavericks had kept that team together. But of course, Mark Aguirre wanted out of there and went to the Pistons and they kind of fell apart after that.
Yeah, I mean they had a bum draft pick and Randy White, and it's a whole sad thing in Dallas with Roy Tarpley. But yeah, Perkins saw the writing on the wall and got to LA as quickly as he could.
Yeah,
one of the first big free agents.
Okay, we got another guy here, a first round draft pick for the Portland Trail Blazers. But it's like Chris Webber off the top there. He's got no team. He's got no number. And to be perfectly honest, I don't really know too much about this guy, but he's got a very simple name. He came out of Alabama, three years in Alabama. Pretty good scoring average, to be honest here. He averaged 18.9 a game in nearly 100 games. Doesn't say where he was. Oh, 21st pick in the 1993 draft. It's going to be a bit of a James Robinson.
Hollywood Robinson.
That's
6 foot one shooting guard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
at some point ESPN did I think 96-97 said that there were more players from Alabama in the NBA than any other college.
Wow.
I think it was 97 because McDice was in and you got your Hollywood Robinson and I can't think of a third guy.
There was a famous guy from who played in the Australian Basketball League called James Crawford, who was called the Alabama Slammer. He may have played with those guys because this was in the late 80s, early 90s there. So someone maybe in the stream team knows. Once again, Googs coming through. Googs had this. He had James Robinson. So Googs 771. Well done, son. Okay, great. This next one is a guy who has one of the most famous. He has a really famous game-winning shot for the Washington Bullets from one of those 80s videos, you know, like, what's it called, Fabulous Finishes or something like that. And the ball, he's kind of on a fast break, but the ball's going out of bounds, but he keeps his feet in bounds, and he launches the ball kind of over the backboard for a three-pointer.
Almost like backward.
Yes.
Almost. Just a weird flip. I can't remember the guy, but I can remember the shot.
Well, you remember this guy because he was a pretty good shooter and he ended up in the Utah Jazz. In fact, he was there.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he was there for the finals teams. I think he was there early in the sort of early 90s there. Excuse me, as a shooting guard. And
everywhere he went, he had to have his first initial on his jersey because there was always a guy with his last name on the team.
Right.
Like there was another guy with his last name in Utah. There was another guy with his last name in Washington. It was like he's a 20-point scorer. I think he made like one all-star team and yet he had to have his first initial on the uniform the entire time, like a sixth grader in a little league team.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be
Jeff Malone.
Jeff Malone. Great job. That's a really good pull.
I keep forgetting he hit that shot. That's such a crazy, it's not like a typical buzzer beater.
No.
You had to really put some weird spin on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm pretty sure that was there may have been a second or so left on the clock, but it was a game winner too. It wasn't just like a, you know, in a transition basket and he was falling out of bounds. He had no other option. It was to win the game. So
clutch Malone.
Yeah. Jeff Malone. Okay, we've got another tough one here. For the Washington Bullets, though, a big guy, a forward. Now, let me just check. They're a little stuck together, these ones. Okay, he was drafted. He was not drafted. There you go. Wow. Mm. A big 6'8" guy. And he averaged. There's not much I can really.
Ashraf Amaya?
No, he's got. He reminds me, there was a guy for the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets who was an undersized center. I don't even remember that.
Larry Smith?
Yeah, kind of guy. That was Larry Smith. So this is Larry Stewart for the Washington Bullets.
No clue. I'm filling with Michael Yogi Stewart, but yeah. Larry Stewart.
Yeah. Look, that's the thing with these, when we pop these packs, you know, you get a couple of great Jeff Malones in there, but every now and again, you get a James Robinson or a Larry Stewart. And sometimes you just have to hope that the guest has some sort of crazy story or connection. But
I'm just shocked he got 33.
Yeah.
Like, who lets an undrafted guy get 33 and then in Larry Bird era? That's tough going.
Yeah.
Especially with two Malones already.
Yeah, exactly. And Mo Cheeks was, that's Philadelphia. I'm just trying to think who else was on that.
Didn't you always do that growing up? Washington and Philadelphia were just interchangeable for me.
For
it was
sure.
so tough.
Yeah,
it was too hard.
For sure. All right, well, this next one, great. One of my favorite players to watch in the 90s. He was a high draft pick by his team, but I believe he got booed when the fans booed when he got drafted because he came out of Arizona, I believe. Let me just double check that. No. He came out of Central Michigan.
Ypsilanti.
What's that?
Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Yes.
And Jerry Colangelo said, no, you're going to love this guy. This guy can cram. Wait till you see him in the Olympics. He's going to be awesome. And now he's in the Ring of Honor.
Yes, and he had a huge game three in Chicago of the 93 finals. I think he hit six threes. In fact, he drilled like the game winner from what is now kind of standard range for guys to shoot from. But the
first guy I remember doing that, just being like, I'm open.
Yeah.
I'm going to take this shot. This is basketball. We're all adults here. We can do this.
And he bounced around a little bit. He went to Cleveland. I think he was an all-star, in fact, in Cleveland. He went to Miami. And then I think he actually sort of went full circle and finished his career where he started in Phoenix and just has a great, great nickname. And you obviously know who this is.
Thunder Dan
Marley, yeah. I had BJ Armstrong on Poppin' Packs one day, and he and Dan Marley – like really, really good friends, just really good buddies growing up. And so they had, you know, great rivalry there in 93 in the finals because obviously Bulls and Suns. And one of the few final series where only one game was won by the home team in 1993.
Nice.
Yeah.
Some veteran basketball right there, kids.
Yeah. Thunder Dan, another guy I've been trying to get on Pop and Packs. You know, we follow each other on Twitter. I've sent him a few messages. He's seen them. I know he's seen them. Unfortunately, no response, though. But his son is, I believe, a pretty good player, too. I've seen a few clips of that going around online. So maybe we'll
I've seen a few clips of you going around online, Mr. Ellis, this during this vacation of yours. And I have to say, it's been a lot of fun. I haven't seen much of the Drew League, but Lee Ellis taking care of business on Instagram is my basketball highlight of the summer, folks.
Yeah, yeah. I've been driving my wife and kids mad. I say, God, you got to shoot this. You never know. I've got to try to put something up here. So, no, it was great. Played a couple of games in Barcelona last week at the Parc de Poblano courts, which are fantastic courts.
Awesome.
Shout out to Conrad who hooked me up there. It was awesome. Perfect night for it. A lot of really good players out there. In fact, something I had never seen before at any pickup basketball, there were a real lot of mixed men's and women playing on the same teams together. Yeah, and these girls were great, like tough, playing hard. No one was taking it easy. It wasn't like there was no like, hey, just play and let's take it easy on the girls. These girls were playing hard, and the guys were playing hard as well. And it was really, really great. Great atmosphere, though. That's the thing about it, that people just out there competing and playing and a whole lot of fun. So if anyone's out in Barcelona, go and check out these courts and have some fun.
They're still talking about the Australian that came through. Lighten it up.
Yes. I mean, there is some selective editing. There's no doubt about that. but look, and that actually, that's something I haven't told JD. I've got so much extra footage from this trip. I haven't got time to put it all together. So I'm going to try to like shuffle it over to JD. So if he can put together a few reels for me. Yeah. What do you think, JD? You got some time?
I'm very, 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 very busy.
Okay. Well, speaking of busy, we've got a couple of cards here left before we have to take a commercial break, and they're all stuck together, but you're definitely going to get at least maybe all three, but you're definitely going to get the first one here, because this guy is famous. He won a championship as a player. In fact, I believe he hit like either the last shot of the 1999 finals, or certainly this, you know, a pretty a big shot right at the end of that series. He went on to become a coach. He was coach of the year for a team that unfortunately is remembered more for what they, you know, messed up, I guess.
Kind of a flame out.
Yeah, yeah. And then he went to coach one more team, but he hasn't really coached then. He's got a really great little voice. He's the little general. And
Avery.
Where do you sort of think of, what's the first thing you think of with Avery Johnson?
I think of the first thing you brought up, which is coming home to watch. I remember being at a buddy's house for a party the night of that game 5, and taping it, coming back to watch it in its entirety, and having a buddy of mine ruin it for me on ICQ by telling me Avery Johnson hit the shot. And I was kind of upset at it being ruined, but then I felt so great for Avery, because that was his whole thing, is this guy, you can't win a title with him as a point guard because he can't hit a jump shot, and all of a sudden he's hitting an 18 footer to beat the Knicks in Madison Square Garden for the title. Yeah. So take that.
Did you read Chris Herring's fantastic Blood in the Garden book?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of that?
One airplane trip. That's how great that book was. I just knocked that off in a second. Yeah. That's a fantastic, much recommended. Go out and get that.
Yeah. I imagine, again, from when you know, were closely following the league and, you know, obviously the Bulls and the Knicks and all that. I mean, you must have felt, you know, like you lived through all of that. And, you know, I thought Chris did such an incredible job putting it all together and writing. And I saw Barack Obama even tweeted out a week or so ago that it was one of the books that he read this year, or this summer anyway. So, I mean, you're getting a pretty strong endorsement there from Illinois' own.
You have to read it. You have to read it. If you're a basketball fan, you got to read that book.
Yeah.
It's just, they're, you know, when the Knicks made the finals in 99, I don't want to speak for everyone, but a lot of people were going for him because they weren't trying to get through Jordan to get there. It was an underdog team, and everyone loved Sprewell, and Avery Johnson had to go ruin it.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about that book, you know, what I found really great was, you know, the stories within the story. You know, the Anthony Mason chapter was obviously fantastic, and just how, you know, Pat Riley has this sort of reputation for being like a mafia boss. And Chris, I thought, really brought that out in the book, showing that he was just ruthless, Pat Riley there. And, you know, and look, how long was he even there for New York? Like 5 years, I think, 91 to...
I don't even think it was that. I think it was 91 to 95.
Yeah. You know, but in that time, they got so close. And, of course, being up 3-2 on the Houston Rockets in 94 there. I mean, but that was the thing. Like, there wasn't the happy ending in the sense that the Knicks eventually won the championship. Instead, it was like they got so close. And
it was a happy ending. For me, it was all right. You know, they went up 2-0 on the Bulls, and that was rough. I mean, that was the biggest dagger. That was because they were built to beat the Bulls, and all Pat Riley did was be on NBC for a year watching the Bulls and figuring them out, and then go to the Knicks, and he knew exactly what to do, and he almost did it.
Okay, well, we've got two cards left here. Let's see how we can do with these ones, because there's this one guy. If you think of the Sacramento Kings in the early 90s, who's the first player that comes to mind?
Besides Jim Less?
Yes.
I'd say Lionel Simmons.
Lionel Simmons. Okay, one more. Another lefty, I think this guy was.
Ooh, a lefty.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got me there.
Yeah.
Oh, was Antoine a left? No, he wasn't.
No. I think this guy was a lefty. I'm pretty sure he was a lefty. He was the number two pick. Wow. Number two pick in the 1985 draft out of Oklahoma.
Who was that other guy?
Yeah.
Lionel Simmons, Mitch Richmond, and... I don't remember.
Wayman.
Tisdale was a lefty. That's right. Does he play that base left-handed?
Yeah.
Oh, look at that low post position, Lee. How easy is he making it for that entry pass? That's how you do it.
What is he doing there, though? Is he establishing position, or is he being? Is he being bumped out of position? Is he trying to...
These tricky lefties, they're always one step ahead of the post defenders.
It's funny, though, just with the Kings. I just think Lionel Simmons and Wayman Tisdale, I think Bobby Hanson was there for a while, Jim Less, but it's just like you just kind of remember those names and those... They weren't very good. I mean, you know, they hadn't been very good, but they had some memorable players and people associated with them.
Games that you wouldn't ever see because they were never on TV. Yeah. They never had a chance. They never, it was just this completely anonymous franchise. Yeah. And then it turned into the biggest team in the NBA for 10 years. Yeah. And now it turned to being anonymous, unfortunately. So let's get it together, Sacto. We miss you.
Just one more, JD, if you can just go in. I will say, though, their uniforms have always been pretty nice. And I absolutely love that. I know the current Kings have had them. Maybe not last season, but certainly in the last couple of seasons, we've had those throwback ones there, those beautiful blues. And that's at least one thing the Kings got right, is they've had some good jerseys over the years.
Those are beautiful. Those are beautiful.
Okay, we've got the last one here. Now, he's a big guy for the Orlando Magic, a big lefty. Well, he's actually not as big as I thought. I thought he's more close to 7 foot, but they've got him here as a 6'9er out of Vanderbilt, and drafted in 84, it looks like.
Jeff Turner?
Yeah, bang. Absolutely perfect. Jeff Turner. There he is. The big power forward. There's Avery Johnson again. And
that's
Dale
Avery
Ellis.
Johnson.
Yeah.
That's Jeff Turner's only chance of scoring the pivot is when Avery Johnson is on him. I got to be honest. He was a bit of a garbage getter, but you know, if there's a mismatch and you got a mouse in the house, you got to take advantage, JT.
I think JD may be able to actually help me on this. I think Skeets had a basketball camp in Canada at one point, and Jeff Turner was the he did turn up, not like Anthony Peeler there. Jeff Turner did turn up.
That does sound familiar.
Yeah.
That explains Skeets's, you know, his court vision is very Jeff Turner-esque. I've always noticed that when watching him dish the ball.
Okay, well, not a bad pack here. I'll just quickly recap them because overall I thought it was pretty good. Jeff Turner, okay, we'll start from the bottom there. We move up a little bit here. Wayman Tisdale, the big Sacramento Kings. Avery Johnson saying basketball, had the great accent there. Thunder Dan Marley, certainly one of both of our favorite players there. To watch and to talk about. Larry Stewart, no one really knows. No, undrafted and, well, I wouldn't say unloved, but I'd say unknown in the pop and packs world. Jeff Malone always had the first initial on every jersey because he had such a common surname there. The mysterious James Robinson, Hollywood Robinson, who Kelly brought up there. That was great. Big Sam Perkins. Should have been one of those guys, probably should have been an all-star at one point in his career, never able to make it. Vernon Maxwell, another one. He was never an all-star. No, he probably was close to all-star selection, you think? You think he was close?
I mean, it probably in 93 or 94 when everyone was like, we can't just send one rocket to the all-star game. We have to, but, you know, it was that Stark situation. Although Stark's made an all-star team where you just never give them the credibility if they weren't drafted top five.
Rick Smits made one all-star game in about 97, I believe it was.
98, the MSG one.
MSG, it was, yeah, okay, that's right, yeah. Anthony, don't show up to my own day, Peeler. and, of course, Chris, anonymous Weber there in the Michigan Blues. And they just obviously had Photoshop and they decided... we're not putting you in the Warriors uniform just yet. Well, so that does it for the first pack. Now, Kelly, if you don't mind, I've just got to do a quick ad read here. And then, listen, I've got so many more packs here. There's no basketball. Kevin Durant hasn't been traded. So if you've got time, you want to pop a few more?
Let's pop some packs.
All right.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, yeah, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/nodunks.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, speaking of bikes, I found this picture of Rick Smith's.
Oh, wow.
Still into bikes, yeah, apparently.
Wow.
He's got the Marist.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for him.
I mean, that bike doesn't look like tailor-made. It looks like a normal bike, but I would think he would need his own
bike.
It's big. That bike is big.
Is it?
For sure.
7'4". Yeah. I mean, there has to be.
Look at where he's got it in the house there too. It's like right above the basement. Like, I mean, you don't want to
100%. He just built that from a kit in his basement, and you know, just like getting the shots of Lee playing basketball on vacate on holiday. This is honey, look at my bike. Well, it's still together.
All right, Kelly. So we got plenty to choose from again here. I'll refresh your memory what we've got. We've got these 94-95 Skybox. We've got these Jordan stickers from 90-something. We've got the Skybox inaugural editions. We've got some more modern-day stuff here. There's 8 cards in there from the current. I mean, they're obviously not just last season, but they're more modern-day cards. What else have we got? I've got another Skybox from 91-92, or I've got the Antoine Walkers here from 2000 as well. Where are we? Sorry, JD. There, 99-2000 with Antoine Walker. The tip-off from the, it wasn't the shortened season, was it? That was 98-99. So what are you feeling?
Let's tip it off.
Let's tip it off with Antoine Walker. Great. I was so.
There are no fours.
I got so much joy out of that post that you shared last week because, I mean, from the very first shot, who's on the call there? It's Reggie. Is it Reggie?
Smith. Reggie actually was still playing in 03, so may not have been Reggie.
Oh,
It could have been me. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
His elbows were, he's shooting east-west at the same time. Sometimes jumping, sometimes not. Tippy toes sometimes, back of his feet other times. It was a masterclass in inconsistency.
It was hilarious. I think he bricked like his first 5 or 6, and then he hit a couple, and then he can't remember even what he scored in the end, but it was just like, why go in it if you just don't even seem to care? You didn't even seem to try. That was the thing.
It was exactly what you wanted from Antoine Walker in a 3-point contest. It was just it was down to a T. I thought it was perfect.
Well, this first guy, you definitely know him because in 1999, I think he was in his second season. He went on to win a championship with the team he was drafted by. Although the year that he won the championship, I'm pretty sure he asked for a trade just before his team made a huge trade, which gave his team stacked his team to go and get that championship. He's a finals MVP. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's not an easy man to love. He's not a player that's all that popular because he was born on the West Coast but had played most of his career on the East Coast for the Boston Celtics. And, he's not a lovable character, but ultimately he was pretty clutch. Finals MVP in 2008 and is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, the truth is he's a baller. He's just the best part about him coming into the game back then is there wasn't like a lot of 80s scorers in the NBA in the late 90s. And when Pierce was drafted 20th overall or whatever he fell to, it was just like, oh, this guy is just, he uses his butt and he uses a touch. And he's, it's like, we got Adrian Dantley back. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good comparison actually there. Cause he was a bucket for those sort of early Boston Celtics teams in the sort of 2003, 2002, where they didn't win a lot of games, but he was putting up 25 a night back then. But do you remember when he did ask for a trade out of Boston?
Yeah, 100%. He was not happy with the goings on, and I can't imagine having Antoine Walker leave your team and feeling frustrated at what, you got too many shots now? I don't get that, but yeah, he was not happy because Ainge was taking his time, and Ainge had a lot of he's drafting high schoolers, and he was drafting Kendrick Perkins and Al Jefferson in respective years, and it was hard to sift through. Plus, Pierce came in at 22, so he wasn't like the typical high schooler 19-year-old. So he threw about 25 trade requests a game in there. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. He got stabbed as well, didn't he? Like, he survived.
Did get stabbed?
Stabbing of
right before the season in 2000.
This season then. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. What a life.
Yeah. 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 But just one of those guys. Like, I've just never felt like, I mean, I've always respected him because he's had some huge game winners and, some big moments, but just always felt like I'm never going to wear a Paul Pierce jersey around.
But he likes it that way.
Yeah.
He digs that. I mean, that's who he is.
Yeah.
And we need that.
Yeah. It's funny because
I love every player.
I remember I was in Boston, I guess it was the No Season Required Tour, and I was talking to some Celtics fans there, and that was, so he'd won the championship, he'd been the finals MVP, but because he was an LA guy, they also said like they never really fully embraced him either. Like it always sort of felt like he was, a little bit of an outsider, but begrudgingly they kind of respected him because he brought them another championship after the, 22 years.
And even in his best moment in winning that title, it was still marred by the, you're going to get in a wheelchair? What is happening, Paul? We want to root for you this time. This is you're making it tough again.
Right.
And, he showed up to a press conference after a playoff game against the Pacers wearing like an over-the-top headgear or something like that after he thought he was flagrantly fouled. He's a jokester.
Okay, this next guy. Now, interesting. You'll know this guy, but I also don't really, have a sort of a moment from him that I can think of right now. He may have been in a dunk contest or a 3-point shootout at some point. He's got a very simple name. He was taken in the 95 draft out of Indiana. Out of Indiana.
So we got a Hendu Allen Henderson.
Oh man, what a great pull, Allen Henderson.
Most improved player in 98.
I think. There you go. Yeah, am I remembering correctly that he was in a 3-point shootout or a dunk?
No, he was a banger. He was a low post, give me the ball and get out of the way sort of Big Ten scorer.
Yeah,
but he could put it up. He played Christian Leitner right out of Atlanta.
Yeah, so
Leitner was an All Star the year before, and Hendu just took his job.
Wow. That's great. Look at that. What a photo that is there too. What's he doing there? A layup,
that's,
push.
That's his game. Yeah. It wasn't pretty.
Sort of a jump hook type of pushy sort of floater or something there. Okay, this next guy, he was definitely in a dunk contest because he had incredible hops, this guy. He was one of the first, known players from the Charlotte Hornets early on. He bounced around. He's got a fantastic game winner where he's kind of falling out of bounds, and I think he banks it in for the Phoenix Suns. And he's become, you must follow him on Twitter, I'm sure. He follows everyone on Twitter, and he tweets nonstop. He's got tireless energy to tweet. He tweets everything, anything and everything.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and,
yes, friend.
I don't believe he was ever an all-star. He may have been close, but I remember him certainly on the Charlotte Hornets and the Phoenix Suns. I think he was in Washington briefly. Mm-hmm. He may have been a Chicago Bull even at one point.
He was a Heat making...
Miami Heat, that's right.
Yeah. Made $247,000 in his year with the Suns, making the minimum back then. When he made that shot and hit and ran him in the playoffs and stuff like that. Incredible bargain.
Right. So this man is...
At Rex Chapman.
At Rex Chapman. Yeah, it sure is. He holds the microphone like a grudge, according to his Twitter bio. Yeah, I remember him in those in those early Charlotte teams. I think it was the 91 might have been a bit early for him, but he was in one of those dunk contests, and he had that nice like flick over the shoulder into the reverse dunk. And he had the bike shorts underneath the Charlotte uniform, which was all the rage in the early 90s.
Just 6'3" guy with hops, just a fantastic player. Watched a clip yesterday where the late Chickering called him the versatile Rex Chapman, which I thought was very appropriate. Nicely done, Chick.
Okay, well, this next guy, he holds a record, I believe, still in that he's a multiple-time NBA champion. And he has more playoff appearances, I believe, than anybody else still in the NBA. He played on three teams, but he had two stops on one team. He played all his career out in the West Coast, and he was recently just relieved of his duties as a head coach in the WNBA. I think he was a head coach and the general manager of a team.
Oh, and he was just GM.
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh. So I'm presuming it's Derek Fisher?
Derek Fisher, yes. There he is. Derek Fisher. I believe he still holds the record for the most playoff games. He's like 250.
That makes sense.
Three or something like that because of all those trips there with the Lakers. Then he went to the Warriors and the Jazz. In fact, I think Derek Fisher has never been... When he made the playoffs, he never got eliminated in the first round as well.
That scans. That makes sense.
Yeah, because he actually ended his career with the Thunder. Actually, now I forgot about that.
Because he's a total front runner.
Yeah. He was actually pretty good for the Thunder in the playoffs, I remember. A couple of times there. Just they needed some buckets and he got them.
Didn't he end up on Dallas for a second too? Mm. Did he upset Jason Kidd? You're not Jason Kidd, Mark Cuban. You know, he got around. He did the work was he a second round pick?
I believe that's right. Yeah, I think that's right. I remember he was, first round, 24th overall by the Lakers. Oh. But I remember the 2001 finals against Philadelphia, and they had the big three, you know, Shaq, Kobe, and Derek Fisher, and they were averaging. they were averaging like 72 points a game, and Shaq was at, you know, 40.
See, that's when he took over for Ron Harper in those finals, so I try not to think about it.
Yeah, he had a nice dunk on Allen Iverson sort of in transition, his right-handed dunk. Not something you remember too much about Derek Fisher, but he did get up there for one, so... okay, great. This next guy, speaking of the 2001 finals, this guy was the backup big man and just a great name, just a really, really good
name. Philly?
Yes, for Philadelphia, yeah.
Oh, Matt Geiger.
Matt Geiger, yeah, there you go. Big Matt Geiger.
And his barbed wire tattoo. Yeah. just the year 2000 in a picture.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was who else can you think? Tom Gugliotta definitely had the barbed wire. Tracy McGrady, he had it.
And every member of the 1998 Cincinnati Bearcats team. It was a very popular. How I made it out of the late 90s without one, I will never understand.
JD will know our former friend or our current friend still, our former colleague at the Score, James Sharman, even has the as the barbed. I don't know if you know who he is, Kelly, but yes. James Sharman, he has the barbed wire tat around the arm.
He keeps it very well hidden because I have never seen it.
No, I think it's one of those things that he often makes sure that it is covered up, although, it was all the rage. I remember thinking about getting one when I was like 18 or 19 because everyone had them. Glad I didn't, but...
It was all the rage. To them. And then it was not very, very quickly.
Yeah. Was it Pamela Anderson? She had one too.
She had one. Well, did she actually get... Because she was in the movie Barbed Wire. Right. So I don't know. That like part of her costume?
That was the origin story. It's a movie that no one saw, but we saw the tattoo on a lady, so we got to go get it now.
That's when she peaked. Pammy peaked around 94, 95, I think, didn't she, with Baywatch and the Tommy video came out around that time, I think.
And then she was in Borat.
I think 98% of the people that have that barbed wire tattoo have seen that particular video that you just referenced. It's just, I think it was part of getting into it. That was the sort of person that purchased that particular tape.
Okay, we've got a couple more here. Excuse me. Now, I've got one. It's not a checklist card, Okay, it's called a daily double.
So you got to eat it twice.
Yeah, yeah. So double performance. Okay, I'm not quite sure what this means. But anyway, this guy, if you think of 2001, very few players had a better season than this guy because he was the MVP of 2001. And
the Shaq Diesel, the big Aristotle?
No, he was 2000. This guy was the following season, 2001.
Oh, Iverson?
Yeah, Allen Iverson, yes.
Okay, fine. I'm upset on Shaq's behalf over the 2001 MVP.
So am I. So, I mean, Shaq should have ended his career with 5 or 6 at least, really.
Look at that guy. Just the perk. That's what a great shot. No one had tattoos like that.
No one had, just
what a wonderful shot.
Not a barbed wire to be seen.
Yeah, I wonder if they're he does have the Panther, I think, on his arm though, doesn't he? The Panther is a very common one. Like Deron Williams, I think, has had it, and a few other guys. But I mean, Allen Iverson, you know, very few players have just carried that same swag that he had and that coolness, and then to be able to go out there and carry that team as close as he did to the finals. I mean, that game one performance in 2001. Is incredible. 48, I think it is, he has. 30 in the first half. Of course, the big step over there of the crossover of Derek Fisher.
Perfect encapsulation of what we were all hoping for, and it showed up on national TV. Yeah. Was just a bit of that and one swagger that we knew he had, and we'd watch him against the Bucks and the Red. You know, it's like it took until the LA game for it to like finally come out, and it's just, all right, we got AI. This is the guy that ticks everyone off. This is good. This is good.
And that, I mean, in 2001, I think they lost the first game against Indiana. They came back and won 3-1. And then, of course, the Raptors series after that, where, I mean, Vince Carter nearly ended the season very, very early. And then I believe against the Milwaukee Bucks in the finals, they may have even been down 3-2 in that series too. Perhaps. Certainly it went 7 games at least, and Iverson had a big game 7 there. But, I mean, then when you got to the Lakers, I remember thinking, like, there's no way they're going to beat the Lakers. But then after game one, you're like, oh, my God, this would be maybe the biggest championship victory of all time if he was able to overcome the Shaq and Kobe Lakers.
It should have been the Lakers in 3. The Lakers were just so dominant from March on that season, and for Iverson to just – go look at the half the team was injured. Everyone had like an ankle fracture or some sort of wrist fracture or some sort of, you know, fibula out of the skin sort of situation. And Matt Geiger at the top of that list. It was Iverson. It was a remarkable year. It was worth every bit of in terms of narrative MVPs. It was that's the tops. That's the best one.
Yeah, and that year, Larry Brown was coach of the year. Aaron McKee was sixth man. Dikembe was defensive player of the year. But the Sixers lost the last game of the season. I think it was against the Chicago Bulls. Had they won that game, and they sort of sat players down, but had they won that game, I believe they would have had home court advantage in the finals. Wouldn't have ultimately made much of a difference. The Lakers still win that series, but you just wonder if, maybe that first game or two in Philadelphia, if... You know.
Rajah Bell played very well in that game. That was Rajah Bell's coming out that last week of the regular season. It was like, oh, wow, they have another guy that's good on the Sixers.
Yeah. I said he crossed over Derek Fisher. Of course, it was Tyronn Lue who he crossed over there. Thanks, Ivan, for correcting me there. A little bit too much Derek Fisher this morning here in this pack. But, okay, now, JD, it's not a checklist card here we've got. It's I don't really know what it is. It's basically just saying... It's really just promotions. It's early internet days, I guess. Here, go to tops.com and
eat it.
HTTPS slash tops.com.
Okay, two more to go here, Kelly. And I think you'll pretty much get these two because one guy was a rebounding menace. A fantastic guy to have on your fantasy teams in the early 2000s when he was, I think he was actually on the Seattle Supersonics there. He also played for the Denver Nuggets. He's playing
one of my favorite college basketball players of all time.
Oh, yeah? What college did he go to?
Cincinnati.
He went to...
No.
You're right.
Okay, yeah. 6'4.5", Danny Fortson.
That's right. Danny Fortson. I remember, in the 2001 season... He was so hard to get in fantasy basketball because he averaged like 14 rebounds a game or something that season. He was a menace, but he couldn't really shoot, and that was a bit of his problem there. But, of course, when you need those stats in fantasy basketball, that's all you need is somebody who can just really fill it up in one category, and he could.
Yeah, he was great. He was a tough dude, and just looking at PJ Brown domineering over him, he had a high problem, but it didn't stop him.
Yeah,
I love D4. Go look him up on his old Bearcat clips online. He's a lot of fun to watch score. He's like Gary Trent times 1,000.
How did you become such a fan though? Like, what was it? Just the way that his intensity? I mean,
lived in Cincinnati randomly for a couple of years, and they had this team full of like bad guys.
Right.
And I'd grown up going for the good guys. And it was like, let's go for some bad guys for the first time. And they were the best team in college hoops. So I just got into Danny Fortson.
Yeah.
And, I loved Nick Van Exel 5 years earlier. So it just made sense. And they lost to Eric Dampier in I believe the Elite Eight against Mississippi State, and never made the Final Four. But yeah, Fortson was just a beast.
Yeah.
He was a lot of fun. I liked him a lot.
It was the Warriors, now that I think about it. He was on that Warriors team, I think, with Antoine Jameson.
15 other power forwards.
Yeah, exactly. No one, like the Raptors right now, no one over 6'8". Maybe Donald Foyle was on those teams, though. Maybe he was the one outlier. All right, this last guy here, he's just got a great, great name as well. His initials are an alliteration, so same initial for the first and the last name there. And I think I'm almost certain you're going to get it when I just tell you his college, because he came out of Indiana as well. 6'7", drafted by the Bullets, in fact.
I'm writing about him right now.
Oh, really?
So the second regiment subscribers can look forward to a Calvert Chaney post in their email box any day now.
See, people think I juice these packs sometimes, and that would be a great way to promote your fantastic blog there, the second arrangement, but we don't. And this is why we do the segment, because it just comes together organically. And Calvert Chaney, I mean, he is one of those guys. Again, I don't remember tons about him, but I certainly remember his name because it's just such a great sounding name.
Yeah, perfect. Just a great basketball name. And I looked it up. I'm looking at his stats yesterday. I'm like, did he take the majority of his shots from long? It looks like he took the majority of his shots from long 2-point range. So you can see why it didn't really work out for Calbert. But yeah, he had a hot start. He averaged 16.6 points a game in his second year. And then it just went down from there, because everyone was like, why don't we just let him shoot? We're just going to let him shoot. He's going to make 4 out of 10.
That is incredibly precise there, Kelly. I know you said you're doing some work, so it's probably sort of somewhat fresh in your mind there. But 16.6 and then 15, 10, 12. And then I think he went to the Jazz, didn't he? I believe.
Yeah. On another one of those, he had like a 6-year contract. And then when his rookie deal ran out, he went to Utah.
Yeah. And he may have even bounced around a couple of other teams there toward the end there. But that was another great pack. The tops 2000s here. Well, Calvert Chaney, Danny Fortson, the Daily Double, Allen Iverson, Big Matt Geiger in the middle there, Derek Fisher, before he used to wear the headband, Rex Chapman, Alan Henderson, the fantastic, Cincinnati? Oh, no, he was Indiana. He was Indiana. Danny Fortson was a Cincinnati one. And then starting with Paul Pierce. So pretty good stuff overall.
Solid crew.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Listen, I'll tell you what, if you got time for one more, maybe one of these.
Let's pop a modern pack.
Let's pop a modern pack, yeah.
What's up, Cade?
What do you think of Cade Cunningham there? What was your impression for his first season?
It was fun to be patient and then have that patience pay off later, yeah. Because you could just tell. It's tough. You get like 8 shots a game and you got to do something with them. He just needed to get to January. He's going to be so much fun. And I love Ivy. Detroit's going to be terrific this year. I can't wait.
Fantastic offseason for them. They should really be hovering around, I think, in that 7th and 8th spot at worst. It's hard to sort of think about what's going to happen. I think Brooklyn's going to obviously make a few changes there. The Raptors should be better. Bulls, what do you think of the Bulls? Trey's not here, but how are you feeling about the Bulls with the offseason and just from where they ended last season?
Hoping they had, it depends on Lonzo Ball. He was borderline all-star with that knee defensively. So I wish they had done more things, but they can make it all right in a second if Lonzo Ball comes back healthy and they win a bunch of games in December again.
Yeah, yeah. Did you, do you go to many games? Like, do you attend games in person?
Oh, yeah. I go to the Pacer Arena is an hour away.
Oh, right.
And it's so great. It's so great. For media or fans, there's not a bad seat in the house, and they treat me very well. Midwest is fun. I can go to the Pistons Arena anytime I want. The Bulls Arena is 2 hours away. The Bucks Arena is it's 5 hours away, and it's a fun drive. I go down to the Memphis Arena from time to time. That's only 8 hours. It's not quite the hub that Atlanta is, but it's a nice little spot I got here in Indiana.
Did you go to the old Market Square Arena Pacers games back? Were you close then? I'm guessing you've sort of moved around a little bit from those.
There for
days.
One game. We moved here right before. So I went to one game in the 98. Well, first of all, obviously I went to that Smashing Pumpkins garbage show in 96 at Market Square. But I also went to the game 6, I believe, of the 98 conference finals.
Oh.
I was very lucky to see that.
Right.
Michael Jordan fell down in the last shot of the game and missed it, guarded by Derek McKee. Yeah. So that was fun to be part of. I talked to Rick Talender on press row and during halftime and got to tell him I wanted to join that press row soon enough. It was a fun experience.
Did you say you saw Garbage at Market Square Arena?
The band Garbage, the beautiful Shirley Manson and all those Wisconsinite guitar players.
I saw Garbage just this year here in Atlanta. Anyway, Marietta, they were opening for Alanis Morissette.
I'm so glad they're still rocking. Yeah. She's an actress now. Yeah. She doesn't have to do that.
No, she was great. They were great, Garbage. One of those bands that you didn't realize, like, oh, yeah, I know more songs than I realized from them.
Yeah, so, like 8 hits or something.
Yeah. Oh, great. Okay. Well, let's start here. So, yeah, we've got a modern pack. Now, this guy, I believe, he was just in his second season for the Cleveland Cavaliers. One of those guys who quite good, pretty good player. Exactly where sort of he fits in their current team are still being figured out there. But he was drafted out of where was he drafted out of? I don't know. But he has got a very cool name. And he wears number 35 for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, yeah. The swingman, Isaac. Yes. Coral.
Isaac Okoro.
Gosh, did he come on this year?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, was he. He's kind of like what I wanted Troy Brown to turn into. He's just going to be a Swiss Army knife.
Yes.
I like him a lot.
Yeah. The Cavs as well. They should be really good this season, I think. They've kind of teased us a little bit the last two seasons by, Darius Garland's been great, and Kevin Love I thought was fantastic last season. And now...
So great, Garland. I'm so happy Garland worked out. You see, get these guys out of college and they play like 4 games and then you worry about them, and then for him to come in that second year and be, that's so great, Cleveland got an all-star.
Okay, this next guy, point guard, certainly at the end of his career, he was a multiple-time all-star. Very, very good player, but we really just haven't seen him play now for what, 3 seasons, and I think he just got released by his team, and he's signed. I think he signed with the Clippers. I think it's official. He's
Derek Fisher.
No,
no, I'm pretty sure that's Derek Fisher.
This guy is certainly was one of the quickest players when he was in his prime. And never a great shooter. He sort of worked on his mid-ranger a bit there, but unfortunately, the injuries have just derailed his career. He can probably still be an effective player, but he certainly, I don't think, will be the all-star he once was. Him and Bradley Beal did form a decent...
Oh, it's Wall.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Johnny Wall.
Couldn't get past the Clipper thing.
Yeah.
So it is official.
Yeah.
I think he'll be fine this year.
Yeah.
I think he's got enough old man savvy, you know? He can still fire those football passes to the corner and find a three-pointer. So I'm actually way higher on him than I would be a lot of the usual guys that we haven't seen play for 6.5 years.
Yeah. I mean, when was the last time though John Wall sort of played good basketball?
I'm not looking for good.
Yeah.
I'm looking for Reggie Jackson-esque maybe.
Yeah.
Well, but like usually those guys get signed and then they disappear and it's like, why did we think that was going to be anything? I just have a feeling that he might actually play 60 games of okay backup basketball this year.
I mean, the Clippers, like if they get Kawhi back and Paul George is healthy and Wall is, you know, 70% of what he was, then they should be better. I mean, I thought Ty Lue's done a fantastic job coaching them, but they've just been killed with injuries these last couple of seasons. And
who are they going after too? Sorry, yeah. Lawrence Frank, but you got to stop signing John Walls.
Yeah. Okay, this next guy, he was a very, very high draft pick. He's now currently on his second team. He's been an all-star at least once, I think only once, and he made the playoffs this season and was actually very, very good. He's a good player. He's a very good shooter, very good scorer of the ball, and we're starting to see why he was such a high draft pick out of Duke back in 2016, I believe he was drafted. And former Laker, current Pelican. And
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Ingram.
Mr. Ingram.
Boy, was he fun toward the latter part of the year.
Yeah. I really like the way that he's worked on his, sort of mid-range jump shot there, getting to his spots. Become a better playmaker too. I think that's important because, he's got the ball in his hand so much. And, there's rumors that he's obviously being dangled by the Pelicans here to try to get Kevin Durant, but not sure if he's going to get traded or not. I think the Pelicans know that if he and Zion can get it together, they can be a very, very tough team to defend.
Yeah, I don't mess with that at all. And he's a core guy. Like he's one of those guys once he figured out that once his belly gets super strong and he can make those passes and get lift on jumpers that he couldn't usually do and improvise because he's stronger. It's the world is his oyster down there. Yeah. And I'd really like to keep that together because I don't want him shooting 100 times a game. I want Zion there. So I think that's perfect for him.
Yeah. What do you think with the whole Zion situation? Like, I mean,
just trying to smile through it.
Yeah.
You know, he's a kid. He's super young and we don't know who's talking to him and who's saying what.
Yeah.
You don't know what offends 20-year-olds. You don't know what upsets them. You don't know what sends them off. And if he's down to a certain weight and his the little tiny bones on his feet can handle it this year, then hopefully we'll never have to think about this stuff ever again.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is you just want to see him get through a whole season. Because we haven't, what's he played 85 games or something so far in 4 years. And, when you look at what Ja Morant was doing with the Grizzlies, you know, Ja's missed some time as well, but, Zion.
Like that.
Yeah. Zion just to have not even played at all last season and he was away from the team and all that, but hopefully things go well.
It was icky. It was not a good situation. He could have handled that 1,000 times better, but I hope it's such a memory this time and, this time next year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this guy, very close to where you live there, plays for the Bulls, real sharpshooter, but seems to be a little bit on the outsides as well now and maybe won't be in the Bulls uniform.
I hope not. If it's Kobe White, I hope not.
Boom. Kobe White,
I am a Kobe fan.
Right.
And there is stuff that sometimes came up with something that I'm going to try to, put up with his growing pains. And, if he's a $20 million a year player, I'm okay with that. He's a scorer. You love to go in early on these guys that you're going to want when they're like 30 years old. I mean, who doesn't want a sixth man of the year five years from now?
And that's the thing. I think sometimes there are guys who are just suited to that role, like a Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford, whatever. And I can see Kobe White as that. Like, I can see him as just a guy coming off the bench, just gunning away, because that might be just the role that's best suited to him, where he can you know, get Absolutely. All those shots up as a starter. Certainly with DeRozan, you know, and Levine, I just don't think his game really works in that sense.
And he got starter reps, so he got to learn how to play point guard as a starter. He got to learn how to you know, sit in his hotel room all day and know that he had to run a team that night. So he got that in. Now you can just go let him be a sixth man and not have to worry about anything in the world. So,
yeah,
I hope he stays a Bull for a long time.
Okay, next one. We've still got a few here to go. Okay, this guy, I'm pretty sure just signed a contract to extend with his team. I'm a big fan of this guy because I think he's got sort of Tyson Chandler vibes for the New York Knicks, but he's another one. He's got to get in better shape and stay on the court because I think he's huge to the Knicks' success going forward. And look, he's
Mr. Robinson.
Mr. Robinson, that's him, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this season with the Knicks, what I noticed when he was playing, in fourth quarters, he just looked gassed to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that conditioning? Is he just not a great motor or whatever? But when he's on the court, I feel that the Knicks are so much better because they just have a lob threat and then they have a rim protector. And that's what they desperately need. I mean, going back, you know, last season when the Knicks played the Hawks, I went down to the playoffs games here. They were playing Taj Gibson as their big, you know.
So unathletic, yeah.
Yeah.
And Brunson's not really going to help that. But, they need dynamism,
yeah.
Whatever that word is. They need someone who can just scare people by putting his elbows on the rim. And
yeah.
You know, maybe that's – and he's got to learn how to play 48 minutes for Tibbs. So maybe that'll be different this year. But, gosh, he's showing some skills on the other end.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you've seen that. He's an interesting prospect. I dig him.
Oh yeah, I like him, but you just think how can he sort of just be consistent with his minutes and, you know, stay out of foul trouble and just stay on the court, you know. But okay, what do we got here? We've got the Frenchman, the man who's on his third team. I think he just re-signed actually with his third team. A very versatile player. Who started his career with the Portland Trailblazers before being lucked out in the 2016? Was it 2016 when everyone got all the huge?
Yeah, he did get one.
He got 5 and 120, I think.
Oh, man, and you know he's earning it right now for another team.
Yes. Because what happened in the end? I think did the Hornets just buy him out?
And, I think they did.
Anyway.
They made him sit on the bench for making $30 million a year for a bit. But good for Nicholas Batum.
Yeah.
He's a heck of a player, and he got lucky at the right time.
He sure did. I've always admired his game. I think he's a very good player and underrated somewhat. But yeah, that
100%.
Yeah, that Hornets contract was it was a doozy. It was a doozy, and. Oh, well, look, it's not his fault, is it? Someone offers you that much, you're going to take it.
Yeah, we had all those classic Nick Batum Hornets moments, like the time they shot to him on the bench and he was telling a guy what to do about basketball. And the other time they shot to him on the bench and he was telling, should not, 5 years more than the money. That's a lot for a guy that you're going to, Nick Batum's a 2-year guy.
Yes. All right. Well, this next one, I've got a question for you, because who do you think is the greatest non-American born player of all time?
Wowzer. I mean, I still kind of side with Hakeem over Dirk.
Yes. Now, this is the question, because I'm a Hakeem fan. I think, you know, as a two-way player, I just think he was better than Dirk. Dirk may be the better shooter of the two, but Hakeem was a better all-round player. But when this man's career is all done, he's already won more individual as far as MVPs. He's a defensive player of the year. He's a champion. He's a finals MVP. I mean, do you think there's a chance we are talking about, you know?
Oh, yeah. I expect at least another finals or two from Giannis from this particular group. So anything less than that he has to top a king. He has to. And he wants to. That's the best part about him, is this dude wants it. I didn't see that movie, so I haven't been inspired by the whole story behind him. But he wants it. He wants to come back with like a lefty jumper next year. He wants to come back with some low post moves in 5 years. he loves basketball. He loves the game, and he loves surprising people. So we're very lucky to have him as you know, likely the best player in this game.
Yeah, and the thing about him that I love is honestly just how he competes, because you know that jump shot, while it's improved, you know, still needs a lot of work, but he is not afraid of going out there and taking those big shots, you know, stepping up and really taking on the challenge. Because against the Phoenix Suns, and again, going back to that season prior, I mean, against the Atlanta Hawks, he came off and it was like that could have been, you know, it looked like in the moment maybe a season-ending injury, perhaps even a career-altering injury. He comes back, they're down 2-0 against the Suns, and it was like you just sort of you wondered if it was just one series too many for the Bucks, and instead they come back and win. And Giannis, of course, has the incredible block on DeAndre Ayton. He has that incredible alley-oop from Drew Holiday, where you know he's basically falling out of bounds, and he still dunks it back in Game 5. That was in Phoenix, yes. I mean, Giannis, the respect and the admiration I have for him, for the fact that, you know, where he came from and to already be this good and this dominant at both ends of the floor too, is truly remarkable. And then he's got the dad jokes. I mean, he's got the dad jokes to boot as well. So, like, what area hasn't he covered yet right now? I mean, where can he go to become more lovable, do you think?
He is jam-tastic.
Yes, that's right. Jam-tastic, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Did he sneak that in from the 94 pack? What is that? Jam-tastic.
Yeah, and the graphics a little bit there too kind of look like they were trying something, you know, with the old skybox there maybe. So yeah,
That's some junior high class photo stuff right there.
Yeah,
jam-tastic.
All right, well, this has been great. We've got one card left to go here, and it's the from the Golden State Warriors. One of their young, athletic, you know, big guys out of the G League, Ignite. I like this guy. I think he's very athletic. Obviously, right now, you know, he's sort of deeper in the rotation, but he's the rare double zero. We don't see too many double zeros anymore. And I believe he's actually Cameroonian, if I have that correct as well, or he was born in Cameroon.
Oh, I was unaware of that. If we're talking about the same person, is it Mr. Moody?
No, not Moody. No? The other big athletic there.
Kuminga?
Yes. Jonathan
really?
Kuminga, I believe so.
I didn't know that.
Let me just...
Yeah, he's just a delight, isn't he? God, yes. He was so great to see him just... You know, he's a cerebral player. He's not out there like just, you know, throwing his head at the rim. He was doing starter stuff. He was playing last year like he actually went to the bench and considered what happened in the first quarter and came back in and did something about it. He's jam-tastic. Yeah. I tell you, he's a stud and a half.
Yeah, he's actually was born in the Congo, not Cameroon. So, yes.
Look out, Giannis.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the thing with the Warriors. I mean, those two seasons, they didn't make the playoffs, and they still get Moody, Kuminga, and who knows what's happening there with Wiseman as well. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, if he just turns into anything capable, it will look like one. It will look like some Red Auerbach stuff. And for them, we want that, though, as fans. Like, we want these superstars to be surrounded by... you know, competent organizations and exciting young players. We don't want Nick Batum and all these veterans coming in every year. It's cool to see Stephen Curry palling around with Kuminga and Moody and you know, whenever Wiseman's in from Santa Cruz.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, these guys could sort of extend Steph Curry's career by a year or two as well, because if they do come on and they're good and they're big and he can throw them hoops and they, you know, they develop three-point shots and they can defend and all that, this Warriors era is not over by any means. I mean, we could be still talking about this in 4 or 5 years' time. You know,
why can't Curry do Steve Nash stuff in 8 years? You know, why can't he just hang on forever? Yeah. His dad hung around forever. Why can't Steph Curry?
And Clay,
I want that.
I can't imagine Clay's ever going to retire from basketball either. I can see him as a 53-year-old playing for the, you know, Sacramento Kings or someone like that. A bit like
guard power forwards.
Yeah.
Just fine. He's got old man skills. His dad was a center. And again, you know, poor, awful for him, but he had 2 years off. So his legs are all shot, but at least he's got some juice in the legs. It's as someone who watched Jordan take those years off and go to Birmingham, like that stuff counts.
Oh,
not
yeah.
having to be in Washington and D.C. and Philadelphia and just go dragging around winter times for year after year after year. So, yeah, I'm super excited about GSW.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was a pretty good pack too. Kuminga, Giannis, Nicholas Batum, Mitchell Robinson, Kobe White, Brandon Ingram. John Wall, and we started with Isaac Okoro. So, wow. You did fantastic, by the way. I wasn't keeping track, but I think you almost went 100% maybe on the guessing, which is great. Daryl Morey has been on this once and didn't do 100%, and he wanted to come back on. So I actually saw him in Vegas. I have to invite him to come back on again because he struggled. He wanted to get out there and have another crack at it, which is what I admire, you know?
Well, you know, Daryl, it's all about performing under pressure. And, you know, some of us have it, and, you know, some of us, trade for James Harden week. I'd love to, have another chance with Daryl as well. I'm sure it was just a one-off for him, and I got very lucky today, I'm sure.
Well, Kelly, I have to say thank you so much for your time this morning. This has been long. I think I said to JD, probably only be a 45-minute pod this morning. But JD knows that these tend to go down these rabbit holes of stories. And but they're great. That's why I love doing it, because you hear about people who are Danny Fortson fans in college. Mm-hmm. I mean, where else can you go for that sort of content? That's remarkable. So
Danny Fortson and Shamon Williams have the same haircut on the 2001 Seattle Supersonics. Go look that up. You're right. But, yeah. I love this podcast, and thank you so much for finally having me on. This was a treat.
No, well, we'll have to do it again sometime. But in the meantime, as I said off the top, check out Kelly's fantastic Substack there, The Second Arrangement. He does a fantastic job, and he's got some Calvaccini bangers coming out soon. So, I mean, it's worth it alone for that. But thank you again, Kelly, and hopefully we cross paths somewhere in the future. Finals, All-Star. Well, the All-Star weekend will be in Indiana when 2024, isn't it, I think, now?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So
I'll see everyone then. Party's in my place.
Be careful. The stream teamers might just turn up and when they hear
I'm a stream teamer. I know how we function. We're the thumbs up crew. They're all invited.
Well, and also No Dunks fans. Yeah, so we've got plenty of content coming out this week. As I say, we've got tomorrow, we have Graydon. With the No Breaks. That's right, Jade, isn't it? Tomorrow, yes. And then Tass on Wednesday with No Bunts. He's been doing a fantastic job with that. And then, of course, the return of Matty O.
Yeah.
On Thursday. I can't even... I'm trying to imagine what Is This Good is going to be. I mean, it's going to be a... It's going to be some really, really deep cuts, I'm sure, and then just some classic Matty O's. And either way, it'll be must view. That'll be on 1 p.m. Eastern, though, on Thursday. So everything else 10 a.m. as usual Eastern, but Matty on Thursday at 1 p.m. And then Friday, who knows? Maybe we'll have some NBA news, or maybe we'll just do nothing on Friday. Who knows?
Yeah.
See what happens.
We'll see.
Anyway, check all our socials for all those. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. And we'll see you tomorrow.